the length where he doesn't actually want to have an introduction, but in spite of him, I'm going to give you a two-sentence introduction. Matthew Jesse Jackson teaches in the departments of visual arts and art history at the University of Chicago. His book, The Experimental Group, Ilya Kavakov, Moscow Conceptualism, Soviet Avant-Garde, is forthcoming from the University of Chicago Press. Matthew.
Thank you. I will be brief. I would like to begin with a few propositions about contemporary art and the social environment today. In The New Spirit of Capitalism, the sociologist Luc Badtansky and the management theorist Yves Kipelo argue that for the global middle class, I apologize for the use of global already, for the global middle class, role-playing is now the defining feature of the post-information virtual economy. A situation in which they write, quote, adaptability, that is to say, the capacity to treat yourself as a kind of text that one can translate into different languages, constitutes a fundamental demand, end quote. That is, the ability to treat oneself as a character, to turn oneself into a cast of characters, perhaps even 10 characters, is no longer a mark of schizophrenia. According to Boltanski and Chiapello, the world's economic order has caught up with Deleuze and Guattari. It is no longer a question of capitalism and schizophrenia, but capitalism as schizophrenia. The need to manage oneself as if one were another is at the heart of contemporary experience. And with the dominance of capitalism on a global scale, one could say that we are entering into a period of global theater, as Pine and Gilmore write, and the experience economy. Thus, stages and theatricality surround us continually, and we realize that all of us will be expected to perform at some point, to perform our roles well, yet at the same time, to be not only willing, but to be able to transform ourselves into something else at any time. This is a fundamental requirement. That is, the most successful person today is the person whose qualities are impossible to define, the person who is many things at once and nothing in particular. And this is not the man without qualities, but the man without qualities that we understand. They're there, it's for us to determine what they are. I hardly need to point out that the Kavakov's alternative history of art is not so much an alternative history of art as it is a portrait of our contemporary cultural situation, in which we are all encouraged to become characters in a play of our own making, to participate in our own universal private histories, rather than in any generally agreed upon shared, unitary, global history. In the future, there will be no history of art. There probably will be no history. There will only be alternative histories of art, and probably only alternative histories. And the Kavakov's is merely one of them. Another important text, I think, today is Seth Price's Dispersion. In it, Price claims that all artists are now conceptual artists, in that the artist is always an as-if artist, якобы художник. That is, every artist is a conceptual artist because an artist is no longer necessarily a person who demonstrates talent so much as someone who makes intriguing propositions about the character of talent. Talents of all sorts, often talents in fields far removed from art. Thus, in Price's words, every painter today is automatically a conceptual painter. The key point here is that we have moved into a post-talent culture in which the capacity to manipulate a given event landscape is the most important skill. That is, the event landscape is the key to the Gates installation, for example. That is, one does not need any particular training to be successful today. Instead, one needs to be capable of knowing how to frame one's actions in such a way that they acquire the aura of talent. They evoke an aura of capability and professionalism. We value the aura of talent much more than talent itself. And what I'm describing, I want to emphasize, is not the triumph of the image over reality, or Baudrillard's Procession of Simulacra, or Guy Debord's Society of the Spectre. I would say that these are labels that describe a time when post-talent culture still played only a decorative role in society. We've moved into a different phase. We are now in the zone in which post-talent culture is becoming generative of our entire culture. In other words, I'm arguing that at the most basic levels, competence is no longer even desirable in the present economy. To give an example, it may turn out that it will become, objectively speaking, bad business to save the planet from ecological catastrophe, because this gigantic catastrophe will produce important new opportunities for investment and profit. Therefore, in the current economic and social environment, we can no longer confidently state that an environmental policy is not effective if the air becomes unbreathable. In fact, lack of talent in solving this problem will produce vast new opportunities for investment in the production of air masks and bottled air. In a post-talent culture, virtually any process can be framed in such a way that it becomes objectively good, and it's not an accident that the Kapokov's work is all about framing. These points obviously relate to another feature of the Art of the Present exhibition. It inhabits the event landscape of the post-talented. There is no parody or pastiche here. The paintings of Igor Spivak are utterly sincere manifestations of a post-talented worldview. They are paintings by a post-talented character who is produced by an artist who is performing the role of an artist. The historian of science, Bruno Latour, suggests that unlike the 20th century, which was a century characterized by extremes, perhaps this century will be defined not by edges, but by the middle. Not simply by hybridity, but rather by a far-reaching rejection of standards in all areas of human life. Societal problems no longer exist to be solved. They exist to be exploited in the most advantageous way possible. Thinking from the edges always looks for answers and solutions, endpoints. Thinking from the middle yields approaches that assume that every problem, every catastrophe, must be an opportunity. And the key is not to arrive quickly at any solution. The process is the key. One finds the most inventive way of prolonging and profiting from the catastrophe, and then, to some extent, one solves it along the way. And I would argue that the inverse is true as well. Movie studios no longer come out and say, this is a great movie. The key is great marketing and peripheral media. It's much more important to have the rumor that something is good than to actually claim that it's good. The future belongs to that which cannot be defined, not by that which does anything particularly well. In other words, the future belongs to the person who can synthesize multiple discourses and never be alien to any of them, yet at the same time to never be unequivocally identified with them. And I must note in passing that this is a fairly good description of the working method of many artists associated with Moscow conceptualism. Thus, I would propose that contemporary global culture, including contemporary art, is coming to terms with what we might call an acceptance of the virtuality and the textuality of the self, the dominance of a post-talented culture, and the necessity of thinking from the middle rather than from the edges of a problem. And the final text that I suggest is useful just as a general way of thinking. And I do think we're in a post-postmodern era at this point. A is Perry Anderson's The Origins of Postmodernism. In it, the author calls attention to what he calls the two alternative value worlds of modernism. And on the one hand, you have the value world of constructivism, Bauhaus, primitivism, the machine, technology, theory, calculation, organization, the written word, the blank canvas, agitprop, systems, escape, destruction, innovation, totality, and most important, the project. Modernism's other value world, according to Anderson, revolves around the lyric, the diaristic, that which is beyond words, the fleeting, the partial, the unfinished, the bodily, the mnemonic, the senses. And in general, one could argue, following Anderson, that postmodernism expressed a general feeling that these streams of thinking and making no longer stood in opposition in the mass-mediated world of the late 20th century. I think that the Kabakovs and Moscow conceptualism's major achievement is to bring these two alternative value worlds back into contemporary art without freezing them in ironic distancing. They return as constructive presences. Ilya Kabakov's art, and I think the art of Moscow conceptualism as a whole, demonstrate a remarkable ability to find forms that evoke both of these value worlds, sensual body at home in nature, and the organizing force of the project. So, to my mind, the great achievement is this image does not strike Ilya Kabakov as the least bit discordant. This is where we are today. And these two halves are a whole, and that whole is here. And he wants to keep these two radically disconnected value worlds in continual dialogue, an atmosphere in which the two value worlds of modernism are not parodied or rejected, as has been the case in so much art of the last 30 years, but kept alive through problematic and intense juxtaposition. These are works such as the alternative history of art that force the mind and the body into a perpetual state of renegotiation. It's not enough to have a theory, not enough to make us mindful of the body. Constant integration of Projekt in Ashushinya, or as a wise person once put it, one must think with the senses and feel with the mind, to which I might add that the Kabakov's work chains these juxtapositions together in endless regression. One must feel with the mind in order to think with the senses, to feel with the mind in order to think with the senses, in order to feel with the mind, in order to think with the senses, in order to feel with the mind. Thank you.